at the 15th. The fairy tale story gets better. A home run for Michael Black.
I think I did it.
Straight in the hole.
No. No. No way. No way. Roy, did it go in?
It sure did. Dunked it.
Pretty amazing stuff yesterday. You really couldn't script it. You really couldn't. Well, you really, it seemed like a script, actually. It was insane what Michael Block did. He didn't win the tournament, but he was the biggest winner from the PGA Championship. The 46-year-old club pro who teaches golf lessons at a public course in California. He was asked the other day, after he had a first couple of good rounds of PGA Championship there at Oak Hill in New York, he was asked what was the most money he'd won playing in a golf tournament. And he immediately said 2014, he was some tournament, he won $75,000. Before that, 2003, $4,500. So anyway, he ends up, amazing stuff yesterday. He hits the hole in one, which you're just sitting here, it's already a crazy story. I'm expecting him to, the nerves get to him, the fourth round, he'll probably flounder. And he just shot one over yesterday, which is good. And he needed to finish in the top 15 to get exemption to automatically play in the PGA Championship next year in Valhalla in Kentucky. And on the 18th hole, he hits a bad shot that goes wide left of the green, and he has a tremendous challenge in front of him to get up and down for par to make sure that he can play in the PGA Championship next year without qualifying. And this was just a really difficult shot. And he put it up there about 12 feet away from the hole. And then the putt barely goes in and the place goes nuts like he won the tournament. And so he ends up getting the exemption. He will play next year in the PGA Championship no matter what happens between now and then. On top of that, he hit a hole in one. Everybody in America was watching. He is a household name. He was supposed to go back to work today to give lessons. However, yesterday, after the tournament was over, he received a phone call, which is on, and you can follow me on Twitter, NCKS Radio Guy 10, received a phone call, and he had been invited. They have one last sponsor exemption for the Charles Schwab Challenge this upcoming week. And they said, we'd like you to play. He said, I don't know, I'll have to check with my boss, who his boss was right behind him. He's like, yeah, I think it's all right. So he was charging $150 for a one-hour lesson. Now, he can give lessons and charge more now. There's no doubt about that. But he might not have to do that anymore the way he's going. He's 46, so he's just about my age. I went out and played golf last night, and my back hurts today. So it's amazing what he did, and with the pressure, and then with people around him. I mean, just the scene was incredible. And he didn't win the tournament. He was 10 strokes worse than the guy that won, but he really stole America's hearts. And it just goes to show that golf can be for anybody, as they said. It was an amazing story. And as Jim Nance, who did a wonderful job, as he always does for the tournaments on CBS, said, there were two winners. There were two champions. Mm-hmm. Michael Block, who was playing for all the tour pros out there, and then Brooks Koepka, of course, won the tournament. And so Michael Block's going to play in the next one. He made $288,333. His previous high ever made in a tournament was 75. Before that, $4,500. He shot one over. But the winner of the tournament was actually a guy named Brooks Koepka.
He's all the way back. Koepka conquers the PGA at Oak Hill.
So Brooks Koepka is now a five-time major, three-time PGA Tour winner. He gets $3.15 million to finish in first. He finished 9-under for the tournament, won it by two strokes over Victor Hovland, Scottie Scheffler. It's his first major win since the PGA in 2019. And most notably, he becomes just the sixth golfer ever to win the PGA Championship three times. It's also his fifth major, and that list only includes 20 golfers all time. And since the 1968 British Open, won by Gary Player, so we're going back 55 years, only six men since 1955 have won five majors. Tom Watson Lee Trevino, Nick Faldo, Phil Mickelson, Tiger Woods, Seve Ballesteros, and Brooks Koepka. And if he didn't have injuries, he'd probably have more than that right now. He was leading after three rounds of the Masters. He's been very open about his own self-doubt. He had his knee was all messed up. He came back too soon, probably slowed down his recovery. But now he looks like he's all the way back. So 55 years, over 200 major championships. Only seven times has a player won a fifth major, and Brooks Koepka is that guy. Pretty amazing stuff. He played great down the stretch. Two majors down for the year. Next up is U.S. Open L.A. coming up June 12th through the 18th. But just crazy good stuff. And, you know, we were talking about what happens when Tiger and Phil finished, like, dead last after making the cut. Gary Woodland, by the way, didn't make the cut. Phil shot 10 over. But, you know, we talked about where was golf going to go? Who's going to be these new faces? And I have to admit, yesterday, Tiger wasn't competing. Phil wasn't part of the story at all. And Brooks Koepka played great. It's a great story of coming back from injury, self-doubt, and adversity. But the thing I'm enamored with is the Tour Pro. I'm thinking 10 Cup. I'm thinking 10 Cup of Kevin Costner and Rene Russo. I'm like, hello. And that guy, he kept it together, Michael Block, I just was expecting him to kind of lose it a little bit, have a couple bad holes and just fall apart. He did not, and it's pretty amazing stuff. And then, oh, by the way, Brooks Koepka makes history as well. So, and I like what Koepka said after they crossed paths as he was going to sign a scorecard. Hey, you're buying the drinks, right? Michael Block's like, yeah, sure. You're the one who made $3.15 million. But Michael Block won $288,000. It's pretty crazy stuff. The other thing that was interesting I heard him say in an interview, and we're talking about Michael Block, the Tour Pro, is they said, well, you know, how does this work with your lessons? How much do you charge? He was being actually talked to on the golf course, I think it was on Saturday or Friday, by one of the CBS people, and had a mic and whatever, and he was talking. And he was very calm and collective and everything. Handled it as he's walking down to go play the next shot. And he said, well, he goes, when I first started, I was just going to give lessons to anybody because I'm trying to make money and put food on the table. He goes, but then once we got, you know, decent, I decided I'm only giving lessons to people that I want to hang out with. So he gives lessons to people that he likes. Mm-hmm. He gives lessons to people that continue to come back. He hangs out with these people. They're his friends. And his son was ill, so his son couldn't be there to support dad. But he took a video of where they're at the club when he hit his hole-in-one. And then afterwards, did you see the interview after the tournament?
I actually did.
It was amazing stuff. So Amanda Renner, or Alyssa Renner, I forgot her first name. She did a really good job with the coverage, too. She's interviewing him, and she says, I've talked to your son, and he had the video and so forth. And he says, not only is it the best day of your life, you've said that, but your son says it's the best day of his life. Mm. And that's when he broke down crying a little bit. He said, stop it. You just made me cry. And that was pretty emotional stuff, too. So just amazing. Just flat out unbelievable. It really is. You couldn't even script it. And, I mean, you could have a movie now based off of this, and you can't even duplicate it. That's how crazy it is. And it's just an amazing story. It's wonderful. And that's what golf needs, the PGA Tour needs, the majors need, is a storyline. Well, they have two amazing storylines. So it's going to be really hard to top that with the U.S. Open coming up in L.A., that's for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. I had a jam-packed weekend, so I didn't get to see much of any of this. I obviously got to see the hole-in-one and all that stuff, but as far as the rest of this guy's story, I was not able to really dive into it with as busy as I was. So it is. It's fun to see things like that happen to people that seem like genuinely good people that have good things happen to them, and just the surprise and shock of having something happen to you like that is always fun too. Just to see him, just the surprise on his face when he's asking Rory if it went in, you know, and all that stuff that had to lead up to that moment for him just to be able to play with Rory on Sunday, right? It's fun stuff for sure.
The lady, her last name Renner, I forget her first name, it's Amanda or Allison, but she said that she was talking and texting back with Michael Block's son. Michael Block's son said that his best friend that was watching it there at the club called it before he hit. He said, your dad's hitting a hole in one. And he did.
Yeah.
Now, I think you could say that every single par three and eventually be right, but that's just amazing stuff. I run out of superlatives to actually say about what I saw yesterday. I've never seen anything like it. We'll never see anything like it again. I do not believe. Coming up, we'll talk Royals baseball. We've seen this story over and over, that's for sure, in regards to the Royals losing. I'll give you one bright spot, though, for the Royals. K-State baseball team heading into the Big 12 tournament. They'll play a team they just played three games in Manhattan. And what happened to the Celtics and Lakers? And how about the Heat and the Nuggets just steamrolling the Celtics and Lakers so far in the playoffs, NHL playoffs as well. NBA great is saying now that he's retiring. I thought he already did, so that's interesting. And the Celtics head coach saying there's a disconnect between his team and himself. That's not good. In the Eastern Conference Finals, are down 3-0. But first, we hand it to Dusty. Recap a regional track. Lots of area athletes making it to state track and field, which we'll have reports coming up on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, I would take forever to go through all the area athletes that have qualified for state, but you can find all the results for state or regional track and field from Friday and also Thursday. The Valley Heights Regional that Smith Center competed in at ncksports.com. The boy girls had a great day, and they won big as far as the regional team championship was concerned there at the Nickerson-Bueller 3A Regional. Southeast Saline boys won the championship in that one, and then at Mankato Rock Hills, Washington County, girls and Axtell boys were the champions there from the TBL. Didn't have quite as many athletes probably in 1A as we usually do that make it to state. That's a very tough regional this year, and a lot of TBL kids really outperformed and did a lot of great things there. But we still have plenty of area athletes that are headed to state in 1A, so you can find, again, all of that info at ncksports.com. Again, things will start Friday morning, so the 1A, 2A, 3A session will be the morning session this year on Friday at Cessna Stadium there in Wichita. So that's a look at what's going on as far as state track and field coming up. We also have posted the brackets for state softball for the Beloit Lady Trojans and Southeast Saline Lady Trojans as well. So that's all posted, everything you need to know there at ncksports.com. Today, state golf takes center stage as we have a few teams that we're actually looking at as far as team standings and things like that could be concerned. We do have one individual in 3A, and we'll tell you about him. Austin Vowinkel has qualified for state for the Beloit Trojans, and he began play at 8:50 this morning on hole 10 there at the 3A state meet in Dodge City. So they have a staggered start there, so they're going back and forth there with that one. Again, we wish the best to Austin Vowinkel of Beloit competing at state today in Dodge City. The 3A and 1A meets will be, as long as you qualify for the second day, can be a two-day tournament for you. There's a certain number you got to hit to get to the second day, and again, those are two-day 36-hole tournaments, and so that's coming up. That's for the 1A and 3A. Sand Greens today is a one-day deal, so it's just a one-day 18-hole tournament there at Leonardville at Riley County. So Osborne did qualify their entire team for Class 1A at Emporia today, so they're underway this morning. They started at 8:30 this morning at Emporia Municipal, and obviously they have a team that qualified their entire team because they won the regional last week at Oberlin. So Osborne's at state, their whole team. And we'll see how they can fare, kind of looking at team standings. I don't know how they're going to fare there and if they'll be able to bring home a trophy. But obviously a great season for Osborne to qualify their entire team for state. And then obviously we're keeping track of Lakeside today as they're looking for their third straight state championship in Sand Greens Golf. And they will compete with St. John's, it looks like, team-wise. We're going to hear from Coach Booker of Lakeside and Coach Walters of Osborne about their teams headed to state. So Again, Sand Greens is underway this morning as well at 9 o'clock, and they're just getting going there at Leonardville on the Sand Greens state meet. So Lakeside, St. John's, we're keeping an eye on. Tipton has golfers. Rock Hills has golfers there. We'll keep an eye on all that area stuff, and hopefully we'll have an update at noon of where everybody's at with state golf. So that's kind of an overview of what's going on today. Again, we did have an opportunity to catch up with two of the coaches that are leading their teams here at State Golf today, which would be Jamie Walters of Osborne first, and then we'll talk to Corey Booker of Lakeside. Or actually, I think we're starting with Corey, and then Jamie is second. Either way, I
would hope you would know. You put it together.
I got to thinking. I was like, I'm pretty sure I put Corey first.
You've got here Booker and Walters.
Yeah, so. I put Corey first. I did this last night.
Alphabetical order.
It's
Booker,
breezy
Walters.
In my mind right now. Everything that's been going on. So yeah, Corey. Corey's first and Jamie's second. We'll hear from them about their teams at State Golf today. Welcome back here on Katy Country 94 on the Sports Ticket. We're joined by Corey Booker, the head coach of the Lakeside Knights golf team, previewing state coming up here today as we're airing this on Monday and looking at the Knights headed to the state meet at Leonardville, Riley County. Coach, first of all, thanks for taking some time to be with us here. You guys have had a lot of success this season. If I recall correctly, you've won all your Sand Greens meets and finished first place in all those this year. And you've got a lot of great golfers that have had really good seasons, you know, at the top consistently. It's been Taryn Winkle and Jace Cunningham, but obviously you've got a whole group that's had a lot of success. How do you feel about your team as you head into state?
Well, I feel pretty good about them. They're some pretty good golfers, and they've done, you know, really well on the year. But you just never know. You know, golf is a fickle little sport. You gotta kind of let stuff go when things go bad and try not to get too far up when things are going good. So you got to stay pretty even keel, and the kids have done a pretty good job of that this year, so it's been kind of fun.
Riley County, Leonardville is where you go for state. You know, fortunately for you, you've already had a meet there, and you did fairly well there. Jace won the meet, Taryn got third, and you guys just kind of did a good job of getting that title that day in Leonardville. So what are the advantages of knowing that course as you're looking now for your third straight state championship here in Sand Greens?
Well, knowing the course is a big plus, but knowing that course, I don't know if that's necessarily an advantage for us or anybody else. It's a very difficult course. It's a par 66. Got a lot of par threes on it, but they got real tight fairways and a lot of rough and out of bounds. You got to hit the ball really straight in order to score there. So the scores are usually higher when we play at Riley County because of their course. You'd think that with all the par threes it'd be easier, but it really is not. It's a difficult little course. And we golfed decently there that day. I didn't think we golfed as well as we can, so hopefully we'll be able to do that this next time around.
I know at the beginning of the year when I asked you if you had the chance here to get the three-peat, you said St. John's could be a team that could maybe get in your way if they have a good day, and it kind of looks like that's been the case here throughout the season. As St. John's is usually finishing second in these events, but is there anybody else that you don't see during the year that might challenge, or is St. John's looking like your biggest threat here so far still this year?
Well, it seems to be just St. John's. They've been shooting in the 310s to the 320s, you know, in that range, and we've been around 300 for team scores. So, you know, it just one or two not having a good day and one or two on St. John's team having a better day than they've had, it could be a big difference. So we just hope that we can shoot as well as we can. That's all you ever hope for. And I don't really see too many other schools that are pushing us at this point in time. It'll just be a two-team race, I feel like.
Corey Booker, coach of the Lakeside Knights Sand Greens golf team, looking for state championship number 3 in a row. Coach, thanks for the time, and best of luck as you head out to Riley County for state.
I appreciate it, Dusty. Thanks.
We're now joined by Jamie Walters, coach of the Osborne golf team here on Katy Country 94. Coach, you got girls and boys that performed very well there at the regional meet there in Oberlin last week, and now looking forward to the state meet in Emporia. Just kind of looking at the group, I know you had a great finish there with the regional championship, obviously, as Hudson Walters tied for third for you, and then Clay Guttery was fifth, Austin Lance sixth, and Brooke Benford seventh at regionals. When you kind of look at the way they've golfed throughout the season and then going into the state meet, how do you feel about this team and where you're at right now?
I obviously, anytime you're going to the state and anything, you kind of like where you're at, but no, just, you know, at the beginning of the year when the regionals came out, I was like, you know, that was about as good an opportunity as we had, and you know, knew we had to steadily improve, which is kind of crazy how much especially on the girls side, how much they've improved. Mm-hmm. You know, they were in the 120s or so at the beginning, and you know, both of them, you know, especially Brooke and Hudson, you know, they got down in the 90s last week at Phillipsburg. So, you know, to shave off, you know, 15 to 20 strokes apiece, that's pretty incredible. And Cassie, you know, this is her first year playing also. So, you know, she's gotten better every tournament as well. She didn't play quite as well as what she had here this last week, but still just, you know, pretty neat to watch them improve that much over the course of the year. and the boys have kind of been the same way. Both of those probably didn't play as well as what they had been, but still, you know, turned in a, you know, Dawson kind of struggled the first nine, but kind of got it together on the second nine and still finished. You know, he probably played some of his worst golf of the year and still finished in the, you know, top five or six, whatever it was. And so really good outing for him too. And Clay, you know, he's been right around, you know, upper 90s. And, you know, he finished just a little bit worse than what he had been, but still really good effort from our whole team. And Nick Hartzaki's our sixth guy. And it's his first year golfing also and just kind of steadily improved as well. So really proud of all of them and the way they improved. And been a fun season.
State at Emporia, it's it starts Monday, obviously, with that, but it could potentially be a two-day affair if you can get the right people and the right scores to get to Tuesday as well. So just looking at the state field, though, do you know anything about that or how your team might stack up with the rest of them, and what are your hopes for state?
Yeah, you know, like, you know, kind of like I've told them all year, you know, one hole's not going to make or break it, so just try to have fun. And you know, it's just you against the course and, you know, how you stack up at the end, you know, nobody really knows. So just play competitive. I know the course is, you know, we were down there a couple of years ago and the course is really long. So it makes it tough when the girls really have to be really good around the greens because, you know, when they're probably getting out drove by 50 yards or so, they've really got to be, you know, pretty good around the green. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of, and the rough, you know, rough, obviously, as you go, gets tougher. And, you know, probably we'll have to play it down, I assume. So that, you know, brings another element in there. So, but, you know, just enjoy the experience. And, you know, not everybody gets to go to state. So enjoy it, have fun, and see where we stack up at the end on Monday. And hopefully we'll get to play another day.
Jim Walters, coach of the Osborne golf team here on Katy Country 94. Coach, thanks for the time, and best of luck to all the kids here at state.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Dusty.
Yeah, state golf starting today again. They're underway in Class 1A, also in Sand Greens, as the Osborne Bulldogs there at Emporia. And Sand Greens will be at Leonardville, and they're competing right now. And then, again, Austin Voewinkel Bullitt is competing at 3A in Dodge City. I will give updates as much as I can here at noon, and then hopefully things will be pretty well wrapped up by 5 o'clock. And if Lakeside has a third straight state championship, we're going to obviously attempt to talk with Coach Booker about that if they can get the job done here today. So, again, all the state golf information is posted for you at ncksports.com. If you're interested in seeing who's all there, what everybody's doing, and the times that they're teeing off and where they're at the current moment. So, again, ncksports.com, state golf here today.
All right, so best of luck to everybody. And then state softball later this week with Beloit and state track and field. And so this is the final week of the sports season for the high school year. And then next will be football and volleyball and everything else coming up later on in the fall. It'll be here before you know it. If you missed those interviews or that interview with Corey Booker and Jamie Walters, it's available to you to check out. And Dusty's shared it on social media platforms as well. And I am retweeting it as we speak on here, too. Royals, do we really have to?
He is running, and Massey lines it to right field and deep. Michael Massey has hit all three of his home runs this year against the White Sox, and the Royals lead 2-0 in the second inning.
But that was it. Two-run homer with the Royals are up 2-0. They lose 5-2. They're up 2-1, and then the White Sox score 3 in the fifth. Add another insurance run in the seventh. They sweep the Royals. Royals are 14-34 in the season. They return home to the K for a three-game series of the Tigers beginning tonight at 6:40. Brady Singer on the hill for the Boys in Blue, record of 3-4, ERA of 7.09. But here is your good news of the day for Royals baseball fans. Michael Massey got engaged. And that's as good as I can get for you for Royals. He got engaged on Saturday, hit a home run on Sunday. He's only 25. There's time to change your mind, Michael. I'm kidding. Royals are 20 games below 500 before Memorial Day for the third time in franchise history. 2005 and 2006 and now 2023. The team has fallen 20 games below 500 before June 8th in four of the past five 162-game seasons. You remember how many losses the 05 team ended up with?
Was it 103?
106. They were 56-106. Want to take a guess? The 06 team, how many losses they had?
104.
100.
Okay.
100. So in 05, 56-106. 06, they were 62-100. This year, they've done exactly what they did those 2 years, and that is they're 20 games below 500 before Memorial Day. So it means that they're going to lose 100 games is what it means, which we've been saying for a while.
Very
now.
Difficult for them not to.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. K-State baseball team, their late ninth inning rally wasn't enough. Wildcats fell short against TCU in the third game of that series, 4-3. K-State won the first game on a walk-off, but lost the second and third game of the series. So K-State now enters the Big 12 tournament. They're 33-22, 13-11 in the Big 12. They'll be the 5 seed, and oddly enough, they'll turn around and play TCU again on Wednesday down at Arlington. TCU is the 4 seed. First pitch, 9 a.m. at the new ballpark there in Arlington, Texas. So K-State last year made it to the semifinals before falling to Oklahoma. Oklahoma has had a rough year in regards to really all their big sports on the men's side. Now, softball looks like they're going to win another national championship. But their baseball team is overall have a winning record slightly, but they're only 11-13 in the Big 12, and so they've fallen down a little bit. NBA playoffs, the Miami Heat are for real.
Three games to none, the 8th seed Miami Heat lead the 2 seed Boston Celtics.
So, if you're a Celtics fan, you've really got to be frustrated. The Heat are on the brink of becoming just the second 8th seed to ever make the NBA Finals. They win 128-102 last night. Game was over after three quarters. It was a must-win for the Celtics, and they just flat out laid a big fat egg. Gabe Vincent, undrafted, stole the show. 29 points, 11-14 overall, 6-9 from three. Heat made 19 out of 35 threes, 54% from three. And here's the crazy thing. Jimmy Butler didn't do a lot last night. 16 points on 13 shots. But Miami still rolled the Celtics. Now, why and how could that happen? Well, one, your role players play better at home. Caleb Martin, 18 points, 4 out of 7 from 3. Duncan Robinson, 18 points, 5 of 7 from 3. But also, I gave a whole bunch of credit to the Celtics stars for coming through in Game 7 against the 76ers. And what did we say on the show? That in order to win in the playoffs, your stars have to be stars. And in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Semifinals, Tatum had 51. Brown had, I think, 26. Harden and Embiid were horrible. And the Celtics deserved the win. Their stars were better than the Sixers' stars. Last night, the Heat, just their cast of characters, they didn't have to have Jimmy Butler have a big game, were better than the Celtics' stars. Jason Tatum last night, in a must-win situation, 14 points on 6 of 18 shooting, was 1 of 7 from 3. Jaylen Brown, in a must-win situation, 6 of 17, 0 for 7 from 3. The two stars for the Boston Celtics combined to shoot 12 of 35 and 1 of 14 from 3. And you wonder why the Celtics got blown out? Joe Mazzulla after the game. Joe Mazzulla was very candid, which you appreciate. I do, but other people are like, well, yeah, you know, that's the thing. The media gets all mad when people don't say anything, right? Then when somebody says something, they absolutely rip people apart. That's what I'm seeing today. Like, well, Coach Mazzulla, even though that's the truth about talking about a disconnect between him and the team, he shouldn't be saying that. Yeah, but when he doesn't tell you anything, you scream and yell. You don't like it when Belichick doesn't tell you anything. I mean, come on. Mm-hmm. That's the media. They think they can have it both ways. Joe Mazzulla basically said there's a disconnect between the players and him. Well, first of all, I'll tell you one thing that creates a disconnect between you, a 34-year-old head coach who's in above his head in the playoffs. He did a good job this regular season, but we all know the regular season and the playoffs are a completely different animal. It's not even close to the same thing. It's a whole different brand of basketball. Joe Mazzulla has been overmatched in his in over his head when it comes to coaching in the NBA playoffs. He's got great players, but he doesn't know when to call a timeout. I mean, I thought it was pretty simple. You have lots of timeouts in the NBA that you want to call a timeout before the run gets out of hand. I don't know what's up with that. I mean, you don't have to, just because you're 34 doesn't mean you're stupid, and he's not stupid to get where he is. I don't get it. You don't think that creates a disconnect with your team when you're seeing the other team going on a run and you are like, you know, bad body language, grabbing the ball out of bounds? You see it all the time. You know, a team goes on a run, you're just dejected. You're kind of like, all right, we need a timeout. And you're expecting the coach to call it, and usually they do, and the Celtics don't. And then it's, I mean, that helps create the disconnect. And there's tons of egos to deal with. And I'm sitting here, you know, Joe Mazzulla is, what, 5 years younger than Al Horford? I mean, he's younger than some of these guys that are playing. Mm-hmm. We're about the same age, and I don't know if that's a good thing either. Well, so far, it hasn't been in the playoffs. So the Celtics are going to get swept. Just go ahead and call it. They're going to get swept. This thing's over. We knew it. I thought it was over after they lost the first two in Boston.
Yeah.
But it's definitely over. No NBA team has ever come back from an 0-3 deficit. The teams with a 3-0 lead in NBA playoff series are 149-0. Now, said the similar thing about the Yankees and Red Sox back in, what was that, 04? Yep. Nobody thought the Red Sox were coming back from 3-0 when they did. So it's one game at a time. The Nuggets have been talking about in the Western Conference Finals, we got to finish it right away. We're going to sweep it. We don't want LeBron and Lakers to get any confidence. We want to finish it tonight, which that's the game tonight, 7:30 on ESPN from L.A. LeBron James has never been swept in a playoff series prior to the NBA Finals. He's been swept twice in the NBA Finals. The one time that he had no chance, he was amazing just to get him to the finals when they got swept by, was that the Spurs when he was in Cleveland?
Yeah.
I mean, that was, he had no chance in that series, and they had no business being there, but that's how great LeBron was. The second one where they got swept, you know, that's one that, you know, it's, I think that helped LeBron grow. But he's never been swept before the finals. Never happened. And there's a chance for that to happen tonight. And the Laker role players, unlike the Heat role players, the Laker role players are not playing well. And Huchamara's played well. They got AD's played well, LeBron, Austin Reeves. After those four, nobody's played that great. Vanderbilt can't make a shot. D'Angelo Russell is just atrocious on defense. See, this is what's interesting to me. You watch regular season NBA, and you go, well, you know, they'll turn it up, and we'll find out more about the teams in the playoffs. Well, here's the thing. If you don't try that hard and you don't play really good defense in the regular season, then you're expected to flip the switch and play good defense in the postseason. And what we find is that some guys, actually, the way they play defense regular season is exactly how they are defensively, and that's D'Angelo Russell. He is bad defensively. I mean, he just does not guard well. And so the Lakers made those trades, and it helped their team immensely. Trading Russell Westbrook away, Patrick Beverley away. They got players that fit. But now you're in the playoffs against the best team in the NBA, in my opinion, the Nuggets. You can't have one-dimensional players. D'Angelo Russell is an offensive-minded player. Jared Vanderbilt is a defensive-only-minded player.
Yeah.
They have one-dimensional players. I mean, Russell Westbrook wasn't a one-dimensional player, but he wasn't going to hurt you from the outside. So that limited his versatility. People leave him open. He'd brick shot left after right, something like that. So the Heat are clearly the better team than the Celtics. And there's so many people talking about how the Celtics have beat themselves. The Celtics, no. The Heat are better. The Heat have flat out taken away what the Celtics like to do offensively. If the Celtics had Brad Stevens, would this be a different series? I think it would be a little bit. I think the Heat still would win it, but I don't think they'd be down 3-0. I do think Mazzulla's over his head, but I don't think the Celtics are the better team based on the way the playoffs have gone. The Heat have been the better team. They beat the Bucks. They took care of the Knicks relatively easily. They're making it look easy right now against the Celtics. They are clicking. They are a cohesive unit. They are a team. There is no disconnect. Their coach is highly respected. He's won before. Joe Mazzulla has not. Joe Mazzulla, who had, I believe, the interim tag taken off, may be done after this year. Celtics aren't. Listen, if you fire Mike Budenholzer, Monty Williams, who was the other one that was fired?
Oh, my goodness.
We talked about the top three teams in the
Doc Rivers.
Yeah. For the Sixers.
I'm like, somebody, yeah. Who was
so
it?
Those guys would be gone, and the Celtics job might be open, too. Think about this. If you are a free agent coach, like if you're Monty Williams now, like, man, I wouldn't mind being the coach of the Celtics. If I'm Mike Budenholzer, I'm like, I wouldn't mind being the coach of the Celtics or the Suns. I mean, I think the Celtics are the best job out there. But you might not mind taking the Sixer job with Embiid to work around, although I don't. The Sixers would be insane to give Harden an extension. So Harden's going to either opt in or he's going to opt out.
I think he already opted out. Yeah.
So I think the Sixers are crazy to sign him to a long-term deal. I said it when they traded for Harden. That was crazy. So I don't think Harden's going to be back. unless you just get the perfect coach. Like if Mike D'Antoni becomes head coach of the Sixers, maybe Harden is back, possibly. I don't know. But I don't think they have to have Harden to be the team they want to be eventually get to the finals. But the Sixers are kind of going to have to retool. The Celtics shouldn't have to do a lot. You know, Malcolm Brogdon, I thought, was a great pickup for the Celtics. Last night, he did not score a point, I believe. After three quarters, he had not scored a point. He was up for the Sixth Man of the Year award. Mm-hmm. So we can sit here and criticize Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Joe Mazzulla, but Malcolm Brogdon didn't do anything either. And he was supposed to help get him over the top. So there's all kinds of problems. But the point I'm trying to make is the Sixers and the Celtics, two of the top. Actually, the top. Think about this. The top three seeds in the East more than likely will need a new head coach. That's right. Mm-hmm. The head coaches of the best three teams in the Eastern Conference are all being fired because they didn't get to the NBA Finals. Because I don't think Mazzulla is going to be the coach next year. So the Celtics will have an opening. The Sixers got rid of Doc Rivers. Mike Budenholzer is fired by the Bucks. And then in the West, you've got Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, maybe the best duo next to Jokic and Murray in the West. There's some really attractive jobs out there. I mean, super attractive. It used to be the only jobs available were teams that stunk. Now it's teams are great, and they're like, you know what? We don't have a big window, and we're tired of waiting, and we're not scared to change coaches year after year, every couple years. And we talk about it. We talked about high school sports. You know, is pro sports as bad of a situation when you have less stability, changing coaches a lot? It's probably not quite as bad as it would be for high school sports programs. Mm-hmm. But it certainly can't. I mean, the Nuggets have talked about this. This has been discussed. The Lakers have a new head coach in Darvin Ham. They changed their roster over at the trade deadline. The Nuggets, you know, they made a couple nice acquisitions. They got Pope, Caldwell Pope. They picked up Bruce Brown, which is a great signing. Christian Brown they drafted. But the core of their team, Aaron Gordon, Jokic, and Murray, that's the core of their team. And Porter. Those guys are back and been with the team for at least 3 or 4 years together. And Michael Malone has been the head coach. The coaching staff's been stable. And they've been playing together all this time. And you can see the difference between them and the Lakers.
Oh, absolutely.
And so if the Celtics and the Bucks and the Suns and the Sixers are going to keep, you know, firing coach after every couple years, or the interim coach, or who's now, I guess, the head, but probably going to be fired, Joe Mazzulla, how does this work? How are you going to beat the Nuggets of the world that have that stability? You know, I mean, think about it. What you have in the NBA playoffs right now, the four teams remaining, the Celtics had to get rid of their coach because of what he did. It wasn't something the Celtics planned. So there's instability there. Disconnect between a young first-year head coach and their team and superstars. But the Miami Heat have Eric Spoelstra, and he is highly respected. He's won. It's complete polar opposite, isn't it? Mm-hmm. They're as connected as any team I've seen in quite some time, and the Celtics are the complete opposite. And you wonder why they're down 3-0. Here we go. On the West, you got a first-year head coach that's done a pretty decent job. You had to change over the roster halfway through the year, going up against a team that hasn't had to change the roster very much. They made a trade or two at the deadline, the Nuggets did. You got a coaching staff that's been in place. You got your two stars that have been in place. I mean, you're looking at Eastern-Western Conference Finals, the teams that are kicking the others' butt are the teams with coaches that are highly respected. They've stood the course. They haven't yanked the coach right away when things didn't go well. And they're respected, and they're cohesive units. And the two teams that are down have first-year head coaches. And in the Lakers' case, half their roster revamped at the trade deadline. So stability, we talk about stability in high school sports is so important. We did a whole segment on the show a few weeks ago about that. It's still pretty important at the highest level, too. And I think we're seeing that right now.
You don't want to. I mean, no, I don't think anybody wants to be changing that much. Like, every year, let's get a new coach. I would hate to be a Boston Celtics fan with what's going on right now, because you felt like you probably were about to get that, right? Like, you had one of the best up-and-coming young coaches in the league.
Brad Stevens, and Ime Udoka.
Well, Ime is who I'm talking about.
Yeah, but Stevens did a great job before
Stevens
that.
Did a good job, and I think they were ready to take that next step. Mm-hmm. And Ime took that next. He was going in the right direction. I mean, sure. They were in the finals last year.
Up 2-1.
And you're like, we got this new young coach. We're going to be good to go.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, summer comes, and he makes a mistake with, I believe, the daughter of a high-ranking employee, and he's just gone like that. Like, the Celtics were not planning on having a new coach this year and a new coach next year,
no,
right?
No, they weren't.
Like, the plan would be, if you're hiring Ime Udoka with the track record he has an assistant coach in this league, that this is for the long term. This is our dude right. to take us where Brad Stevens couldn't quite take us as right. a coach, right? So he's in administration now and going and finding dudes for the new coach, right? And mm-hmm. and so you're sitting here like, this is perfect for us. We just made the finals. I know we had a lead, probably should have won the finals, but hey, we took a step in the right direction. We're going the right way, and then boom, all of a sudden it just collapses. And now you've got a coach that you felt you trusted and did a good job this year. I'm not going to say he didn't. Led you to the number two seed in the East, right?
Right.
But it's like, okay, now we're having mistakes. There's he's now saying publicly there's a disconnect between him and his team. And, I mean, if you're a Celtics, I don't feel sorry for them. They've won enough championships, right? But in the now and living in the moment, it's like that would not be fun if you're a fan of that team to go through all that and have all the highs of the highs. And yeah, and now Ime Udoka's right back this year, going to be the coach of the Rockets and go forward. And now you're going to be like, oh, man. Just the way this is ending with Missoula is not the way you want it when you felt so good at this time of the year last year.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you don't want the changes, and they're about to go through it again.
Looks like we're going to have Heat Nuggets unless something happens to go against history.
Yeah.
Heat Nuggets. Well, I'm sure TV execs are excited
they're
about that
loving
one.
That.
I think it's great. I mean, they're the two best teams. They deserve it. Carmelo Anthony announced his retirement today. I thought he was already retired. I had no idea. Seriously. It's kind of like, okay. NHL playoffs, and then we got a couple of news, sports news stories that are breaking right now.
Stalled across the line, has Theodore. Theodore shot, rebound, goal! Vegas wins in overtime!
So Las Vegas wins in overtime for a second straight game. So they've held to the home ice advantage. They're up 2-0. The series will shift to Dallas. So the Knights up 2-0 in that best of seven Western Conference Finals, two wins away from the Stanley Cup Finals. In the East, the Florida Panthers, the eighth seed from Florida, they're up 2-0. They host Game 3 in Florida. They won the first two on the road in Carolina and won in four overtimes. That'll be at 7 o'clock on TNT tonight as the Stanley Cup playoffs roll on. A couple of other notes here. Well. You know, I am going to continue to beat our chest or my chest about this. And we were way ahead. I did not see anybody nationally talking about this. Now, maybe I missed it. I don't know. But here we go. Here we go. After five players were suspended in April, the National Football League is now investigating a second wave of potential violations of its gambling policy. ESPN.com says, on the little headline story on Twitter, "Wanna bet? Inside the NFL's gambling policy, and while violations are possible, the NFL has embraced the evolving landscape of sports betting, but as opportunities grow, so does the potential for trouble." Huh! Somebody in Glen Elder, Kansas said this like a month or two ago. And I have said this. It is the tip of the iceberg. Unless people are just going to turn a blind eye, this is going to continue to happen in professional sports. We're already seeing it. College sports, pro sports. The NFL is sending a mixed message. You're sitting there going, we can lie in bed with all of these gambling sites. And in the middle of NBA Finals games or NBA playoff games, like the other one, it's even gotten more specific. I'm watching the other night. It's the Nuggets and Lakers. In the middle of the third quarter, boom, FanDuel pops. A thing for FanDuel pops up. Which team's going to score the next field goal and how? We're not even talking about the spread of the quarter. We're not talking about the spread. It's moved the line during the game, which they were doing. Now we're talking about who's going to make the next basket. You're encouraging people to bet on everything possible. Like, what's next? What time is Dusty going to go to the bathroom at KD Country 94? What's the over-under? Are we doing before or after the show? I mean, that's what we're getting to. We're going to bet on everything. Every single thing imaginable, we're going to bet. And people are silly enough to do it. And then I always love at the end of the NBA broadcast, and you notice this? At every single end, there's the last bottom third or fourth of the screen. They never talk, the announcers don't say it, but it says, gambling problem, call blah, 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 blah. And then the announcers, who have been told to do this, I'm sure, need Van Gundy and Jackson, who I think do a great job, they're basically been told, pick a player. So they play along. Which is okay. It's kind of like a game show within the game, but they're not betting on it. But a lot of people are right away on their phone going, I got Michael Porter Jr. scoring the next bucket. Oh, I can make a few bucks. I'm going to take LeBron. It's like, dear God, just put your phone down and watch the game and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
and you wonder why this is going to be a problem. Listen, if you're a young player, even if you're not of age to gamble, or you are, you're sitting here going, now wait a minute, hold on a second. You are making tons of money off of all of these entities for gambling on sports. And without me, or all of us athletes, you have no sports to make money off of gambling sites and people that gamble. But you tell me I can't gamble. Now, every company has their rules. I get all that. At the same time, it is a mixed message. Mm-hmm. I've said this before. When you have beer sales at a college event and then go out in the parking lot and take alcohol away from people that are underage or bust them for drinking under the age, yet you have alcohol all over the place in the tailgate in the parking lot, and you sell it at a college stadium, even if you have your own special place to drink, that is a mixed message. And when you have Bud Light and Budweiser and whatever beer company that's advertising for college athletics, most of the college athletes aren't legal age to drink. Mm-hmm. That's a mixed message. Well, why are these kids drinking? Why do we have young people becoming alcoholics? Well, there could be all kinds of reasons. But it ain't helping that you're shoving it down their throat with TV commercials. It doesn't help that you're doing it at the games they're actually playing in or the student section is cheering for. Now, let's not be naive. We know there's tons of underage drinking. It's been happening for years upon years. But it's a mixed message you're sending. Because why? The college is like, well, we don't want drunk driving. We don't want kids to be drinking. We don't want underage kids. But we'll take the whatever beer sponsorship that comes with it. You selling your soul to the devil. You say, oh, you know, that is so sad. There was a horrible car accident involving, well, that is just horrible. Now remember, don't drink too much before you drive. Here's an idea. Don't drink at all before you drive. You can't. Can you go to a game without drinking? Yeah, you can. It Absolutely. Is possible. You can go to a sporting event without consuming.
Yesterday without drinking.
You can actually watch a sporting event without gambling on it. I know this is an insane hypothesis here, but you can. But if you're addicted, you can't. If you're addicted, you can't. Yeah. If you're addicted, you have. And listen, if you're an addict, if you're a gambling addict watching the NBA playoffs right now, you're already hooked. You're immediately going, oh, yeah, I can bet on that. Boom, pick up the phone, place a bet. Who knows what it is? Because Jeff Van Gundy says LeBron's going to score the next bucket in the Nugget Laker Game 3 series in the third quarter when the Lakers are down 12. It's like, really? Why does this matter? Why are we making bets like that? It's because everybody knows people will do it.
Oh, yeah. They wouldn't be having those kind of prop bets if they didn't have live bettors that are doing this all the time.
Of course not. And listen, betting can be fun. It can be entertaining. I'm okay with gambling. I don't gamble hardly at all. I tell the people before, I gamble. My gambling is the stock market. I buy stocks. I sell stocks from time to time. I do not do the gambling part. I maybe go to casino once every, on average, 3 or 4 years. That's just because I gamble. And I'm like, okay, fine. I'll go play blackjack. And then when we're ready to leave, we leave. I'm not too worried about it. You know, I might win $100. I might lose $100. I don't go back to the ATM and keep pulling out money. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like flushing my money down a toilet. That's just how I feel. Like, I'm at least going to play blackjack if I'm going to play, because at least I can control the cards a little bit, and as to whether I'm going to take a hit or not, or I'm going to double down, I'm going to split it, I'm going to hold, I'm going to stay. Whereas, I'm not playing the roulette table. Sorry, not playing it. There's nothing that's pure luck. The roulette table is pure luck, okay? I do not play the slot machines. Listen, if you love to play the slot machines, congratulations. Well, that's fine. You know what I think when I put... I actually haven't done it. My wife's done it. She likes to do that just because she doesn't do the card game stuff. But you know what? I every time I see somebody put a coin in a slot machine or whatever it is that they do now, you know what I think? I think I picture a toilet, and I ain't lying. I picture a toilet full of change, and people are actually flushing their change literally down the toilet. That's what I see. I picture it in my head immediately. As soon as I see a slot machine, I think toilet, change, flush. And you ain't getting it back once it goes down the drain, are you? So now somebody is, but you're not. So I'm not a big into the gambling thing that a lot of my friends are, and that's okay. My friends can do whatever they want. It's their money. I'm cool with it. My point to the story is, this is becoming almost overwhelming.
You know, I see, well, Missouri's got to legalize sports gambling because everybody around Missouri has. Well, you know, I get it. That money then migrates to Kansas if you want to bet. We saw it in Kansas when you want to go down to Wichita, didn't want a casino in their backyard, did they? Well, Mulvane went ahead and said, we'll take you. And Mulvane's made money off their casino.
Oh, yeah.
And Wichita lost that money to the South. So somebody's going to build it. Somebody's going to legalize it. And you sure as heck know people are going to go blow their money gambling. If you want to say, hey, it's my form of entertainment. I like to play. Yeah, that's cool. I've done that before. But if you're addicted, you really need to seek help. So for anybody that's addicted to gambling, this is not a good time for you. Because this is being shoved down your throat at any sporting event. It's going to be... It's going to happen. It's going to be even bigger and bigger all the time. You're going to have eventually sports places everywhere you sit. You're going to be able to grab something right at your seat and you're going to be able to place a bet, or they're going to shove it down your throat on the Jumbotron at Kauffman Stadium and every other sporting event. Gamble now, but they won't say gamble now. Yeah, place your bet now, or who do you think's going to do this? Go to this app, boom, just like they're doing during the NBA playoffs. And it's going to encourage you. And you're going to go gamble if you like to gamble. And that's fine. And what's happening is these professional sports franchises or leagues are like, this is awesome. Because now we know that DraftKings and FanDuel and what MGM and whatever else are going to keep buying sponsorships. And we can even charge them more because their numbers are going up because we're promoting the gambling. Even though that probably enhances people getting addicted to gambling. But they don't care. Because it's always about the almighty dollar. We don't give two bleeps about somebody being addicted to alcohol or addicted to gambling, as long as it isn't somebody you really care about. You know? Oh, well, this guy, well, this athlete, he's flushed his career down the toilet because he can't stop drinking. Well, it is his choice, okay? But maybe we should care more about, I hope he gets help, instead of, what a moron for messing up his career. That's how society is today. We just immediately cast stones at everybody. Well, he's an idiot. He drank his career away. No, he's a guy that probably needed help and never got it. And maybe that's happening with gambling. So now you got a league like the National Football League, the NBA, where you've got young people coming into your league and they're a little bit confused. Wait a minute. I watch sporting events of a sport I play. You're telling me to gamble.
Mm-hmm.
But now you tell me I can't gamble. Well, but I really kind of like gambling, or I like to play on the side a little bit, or I don't even fully understand all the rules because it might seem like it's moving goalposts. I don't know. Maybe they're not educated like they should be. I think they are. Once you come in the league, it's just whether you pay attention or not, probably. But it is exactly how it's worded, and we've said this for a long time on this show. And nobody nationally has been talking about it. And it's still not being talked about enough. And you know why it's not being talked about enough by ESPN and these sports talking heads? Because they're being fed. They benefit and get paid a roundabout way through advertisers. So you're not going to see the normal talking heads on Fox and ESPN chastising leagues for allowing gambling. You're not. You're not even going to see them being overly worried about players being suspended or kicked out of league because of gambling until it's a star player. Once it's a star player, oh dear Lord, the national people are suddenly going to act like they know everything about it. They're aware of it, but they are being told, or they don't have any gumption themselves, where they're going to say, I get paid, I'm going to stay under the radar, we might poke at the bear a little bit, but we're not really going to say what we need to say. We're not going to address what is becoming a bigger problem in sports, and will continue to be. It will not get better. It will not get better. It is going to be more and more of these gambling ads, over and over and over, sports betting ads. Once again, everybody has their choice whether they gamble or not. But what I'm saying is eventually I think it's going to bite these leagues in the butt, because it is exactly how it's mentioned here. The NFL has embraced the evolving landscape of sports betting, but as opportunities grow, so does the potential for trouble. So then you got to decide what outweighs the other. Is it the opportunities? Well, of course it is. The NFL, the NBA, these leagues believe that, yeah, there's potential for trouble, but they see the big dollar sign. We can make billions of dollars over so many years. We'll make millions and billions of dollars off of sports gambling ads and sponsorships and everything else. And yeah, if we lose a few players and end up being dumb enough to bet and we told them they can't, yeah, you know, that's just the price we'll have to pay. The opportunities outweigh the trouble for the league. Now, that doesn't work for the athletes, but they still push the envelope, don't they? And so here we are, another investigation. This has already affected college sports. We have an investigation with Iowa, Iowa State. We've got an Arkansas baseball coach is fired because of it. You've got NFL players have been suspended or actually already thrown, released by the Detroit Lions. You got a first-round pick that's suspended six games because of his gambling. So we got a player that gambled and is just now getting reinstated this year after placing one bet. He was suspended for a whole year. Ladies and gentlemen, if you ever talk to anybody about sports gambling and wondering where how it got to where it was, please remember who told you first a long time ago. It wasn't Stephen A. Smith. It wasn't Colin Cowherd. It wasn't any of these guys getting paid millions of dollars because their hand is in the cookie jar with all these companies. I have no connections to these sports betting sites. I can gamble all I want. I can decide not to gamble. But I can identify a problem when I see it. And this is a problem that you could really have seen as soon as anything was legalized. Okay? And once again, is it all bad? Not necessarily. But there was, not too long ago, it was, you didn't talk about Vegas. You had to make these, you know, roundabout gestures like Brent Musburger did. Or Al Michaels. Well, that's interesting. Now you can flat out talk about gambling openly. And so when you get in bed with the partner that is sports gambling and betting, as these leagues have, you got to get ready for you to get burnt. You're going to get cheated on. Okay? You're going to get burned in this relationship. The question is it more beneficial for you to stay in this relationship and get burned multiple times because it's still better for me to stay with that entity? For instance, let's give you an analogy. If you're a person that's been, it could be a guy or a gal. So if you're a wife that's married to a husband and he's really, really, really rich, or you're a guy married to your wife who's really, 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 really rich, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. But one of you cheats on the other. Well, in essence, the person that is rich cheats on somebody and you're the one that really likes your lifestyle. You're probably not, maybe you're forgiving them, maybe you're not, but you're like, eh, we'll stay married because it benefits me to stay in this relationship, even though there's all kinds of improprieties going on here. I benefit because I'm living in the mansion. I still get to ride in the private plane. And even though my husband or wife is cheating on me, this was one of the perks of being married to this person, and I will deal with it. And that's how I kind of feel like with the sports leagues. You know what? And they're not stupid. They knew things like this would probably come up. Yeah. The interesting part will be if it's a big-time name. And I think there will be a time where somebody is going, I've said it before, there is going to be a gigantic gambling scandal in sports. It's going to happen. I said before I die, I've revised that. It's going to happen the next 5 to 10 years, if not sooner. And it is going to threaten the credibility of a particular league. I don't know which one. Now, whether that league will survive because of it, I'm guessing they probably will. But I think you're going to have at least one well-known athlete at some point in time. And it'll probably not even make sense why they would jeopardize everything. Because they're making tons of money anyway. But I think there's always a dummy somewhere. Okay? That's the best way I could put it. There's always somebody that's not the sharpest tool in the shed. 11 and a half donuts short of a dozen. You've heard all kinds of analogies, right?
Yes.
And it'll happen. Mark my words. It will happen. I've called these shots before they've happened here the last few months. I've been focused more on the pro sports side, and we've had really more gambling issues with colleges since we've talked about it. But here we are. Another investigation. So as long as there's some kind of oversight, if there are investigators looking into this and making sure the athletes are on the up and up, this will continue to be a problem. The question to me will be, will we get to where it's such a problem that eventually the leagues will say, you know what, let's not worry about investigating nothing. But that's not necessarily the league's thing. It can be federal investigators. The league don't have control over all that. So here we are. And it's another story, and it's just kind of, you know, somewhere not at the top of the ESPN headlines, I can tell you that right now. At least I don't think so. The other thing is ESPN and Pac-12 are having no substantive talks at this time. The Pac-12 keeps telling us ESPN's interested in them, yet ESPN, no, doesn't seem to be the case. So we don't know what the Pac-12 is going to end up doing. Perhaps they'll be on ION. That's a TV channel, if you didn't know. Network. I don't know what's going to happen. So we are into a dangerous precedent in sports, I think, from the gambling side. We're also in a dangerous part of sports when it comes to conferences dissolving, possibly merging, or super leagues, not good for the little guys. And I'm going to leave you with this. I was watching this on 60 Minutes last night. And you may say, where am I going with this? But I have a point. So I'm watching 60 Minutes last night. And they had a story about how our government is getting screwed left and right by defense contractors that are overcharging for all kinds of weapons for the battlefield, or parts for tanks, parts for Apache helicopters. A $328 part, they charged the government $10,000 for. We actually had helicopters in Iraq that needed to be on the battlefield ready to go, and a defense contractor was not going to sell the valve parts unless the government paid what they wanted, which was extortion in essence. Mm-hmm. And so think about that. You've got people. This is how money grubbing our society is today. We've got defense contractors, okay, that are willing to hurt our chances on the battlefield so they can make tremendous profit off of a part to fix an Apache helicopter that's on the battlefield. But here's what happened. Why wasn't this a problem years ago? Well, years ago, there were all kinds of different companies that you could buy these parts from or could buy these weapons from. Now, what's happened is, and they showed it, it was probably 50 to 100 companies have merged over the years into about five or six. There's one company in particular that is the only source for certain weapons.
Mm-hmm.
So they could charge whatever the hell they want. And the government stuck with it. They said a Stinger missile used to cost $25,000. Now $400,000. Now why? Because there's less choice. There's not that many options. Okay? Now, what's Wade's point? You get into sports. Used to be you had all kinds of leagues and options, right? You as a school, you had options with different leagues that are out there. There wasn't the haves and have nots, you know? But over time it's slowly gone that way, right? Mm-hmm. The SEC didn't used to always be the number one league in America. The Big Ten and SEC didn't used to get $1 billion contracts or unbelievable TV deals. So eventually what you do is you're weeding things down. So if the Pac-12 dissolves, now, what happens? You have less conferences to choose from in regards to where you want to play or who you're going to cross schedule. There is less choice if you're wanting to decide who you're going to play in regards to league affiliations, okay? Because now we could go from five or six big leagues to possibly four. Maybe eventually the ACC will dissolve. Maybe eventually the Big 12 will dissolve. And now we got just two gigantic super leagues. But they all can't play each other. So now how are you going to decide who the league champion is? And so what I'm saying is when we condense and when we squeeze things like we are doing with college football and college athletics, and that's what we're doing. Mm-hmm. The Big Ten gets bigger. The SEC gets bigger. The Big 12's got to scramble to get some teams. And the Pac-12's scrambling to do what they're going to do. And I think at some point we're going to see one of these leagues dissolve. And get gobbled up by others. And people have said for at least 10 years, we're going to have four 16-team super leagues, and it's going to be the only game in town. And if you're not part of the 64 teams or schools, then you got no chance to win a title in any sport. And Mark Jackson, the voice of the Colorado Buffaloes, he's even talked about that. And that does look like where we're going to go. I'm surprised we haven't got there sooner, but it may be later instead of sooner, but I think we're probably eventually going to get there. Now, whether it's 20 years from now, 30 years from now, 10 years from now, when I die, I have no idea. But the point I'm trying to make is when you have less choice, it is actually usually ends up being worse for who? The customer.
Yeah.
The consumer. So, for instance, it's bad for our government when there's not that many entities that sell these weapons or sell the parts for the weapons. And so our government, even though we think the government is the handles everything, no, they're at the mercy of these contractors because they help create the laws to allow all kinds of mergers. Mm-hmm. And so thus, the government is a customer or a consumer that's getting the shaft. We, as sports fans, okay, we are getting the shaft in regards to these leagues now going wherever they want willy-nilly to where there is no KU, K-Nebraska games. There is no, there won't be K-State, Oklahoma games. I mean, come on, those are cool road trips to Lincoln, Nebraska, to Norman, Oklahoma, to Boulder, Colorado, to Columbia, Missouri. We're having less choice. You could say, well, we got just many choices. Well, okay, if you want to say we got just many games on the schedule. Yeah, but we're limited now as to the games we're going to attend if they're all the way in New Jersey, if they're all the way in L.A., if they're all the way in Provo, Utah, compared to in the region. And so our options tend to get a little bit more limited. But does anybody care about that? No, but it's all about the money, no matter what, whether it's sports gambling, with sponsorships with leagues, whether it's the TV contracts, whether it's the conferences breaking down and dissolving or working against each other, whether it's the government not being able to get parts at a reasonable price to fix our equipment on the battlefield. When you have less options, that is bad. It is bad. I don't know what the rules are now with the FCC, but it used to be that you could only own so many radio stations in a market, a company could, but you couldn't own a newspaper because that's a conflict of interest. There's too much control. Now what we've seen is that's been loosened up over the years, and I'd have to look at what the rules are now, but I know now you've got TV companies that own newspapers. They own radio stations. There's like almost like there's no limit. I'm sure there is somehow, some way, hopefully. But you've got radio used to have all kinds of companies, just like there used to be a whole bunch of defense contractors, okay, and companies. Now radio and TV have less and less corporations. So now I think that is something, and people were talked about it years ago, warning about this. When we have less choice, when we have less newspapers to read, when we have less companies owning radio stations, when we have less companies owning TV stations, it makes it easier for a particular company to control the narrative and force whatever they want on their agenda down your throat. Think about it. It's not that hard. If you own a TV station in a market and the top radio station in the market, you own a top TV station in the market, and you own the biggest newspaper in the market, you control information.
Yeah.
You absolutely control the narrative. And then you can convince people that what you're telling them is true, and they believe everything they see. Well, okay, this paper says this, and this TV station says this, and the radio station says this. Well, that's three different entities. They all agree, so that must be the truth. But what you don't know is the same person owns all damn three of them.
Yeah.
We as a society don't know that. So we're like, well, that's a different name of a paper. That's a different name of a station. Well, and they agree with this other one that I always watch, so it's got to be true. Well, wait a minute. You don't know that the same guy owns all of that. And so you don't even realize that your choice of watching what you want to watch, read, or hear has been limited because of the restrictions lifted off of the rules that used to be as to how many stations you could own in certain markets, how many radio stations you could own as a complete company, TV stations, newspapers, media. So all of this is bad, in my opinion, for us, the consumer. It's not, think about it. If you only had, and there's less choice now too with cable companies. There's less choice. I mean, you've got satellite options. You got more choices when it comes to streaming. But eventually that will end too. Listen, you've got less choices with airlines. You used to have a whole bunch of airlines companies where you could find a pretty good airline deal. Now, there have been so many mergers and more to come to where they can control and force the price to go up. And you have no choice because there's only four or five companies that own all the airlines in the country. You've got to pay more. You're stuck because you have less choice. And we as society has allowed it to happen. And so we're allowing sports gambling to do whatever it's going to do. To hell with the consequences. We're allowing other countries to buy primetime real estate in our country. And we'll sell out to make the money instead of keeping it local or in our country. This is documented.
Mm-hmm.
Because we'll sell out to whoever the hell will pay me the most money. That's just the way we are now. We are a money-grubbing society that only cares about the almighty dollar. That's it. The NFL is no different than any other corporation.
No.
The NBA is no different. It's no different than the defense contractors. It's no different than media companies gobbling up other entities to control the narrative or information or shove an agenda down your throat to make you believe it. None of this is good. Eventually, you're going to have, like right now, you got what? YouTube TV, you got Sling, you got Hulu, you got. Eventually, you're going to have less choices there too. Because one company is going to need to be bailed out, or they're going to be like, let's team together and form one company and be stronger. And thus, what's going to happen is you're going to have less choice and your price will go up. Mm-hmm. You used to have way more cell phone companies out there. Look at all the mergers that have happened there. What do you got? Sprint, Verizon, T-Mobile? Can you name anybody else?
You can't name Sprint anymore because they're with T-Mobile.
Oh, that's right. See, I can't even keep up with it.
Verizon and T-Mobile are the
pretty much the two main ones.
National ones right now.
So yeah. You have less choice. And by the way, over time, have you noticed the phone bills go up with their cell phones? Yeah. Of course. Yeah. You've got, we got more limited. We got all kinds of options. Well, yeah, but they're limited. You're forced into a pigeonhole. And so guess what? Your options get limited, obviously, too, for a school. Let's say you're in the Pac-12. Your options are getting down to where if I want to leave, I've got the Big 12. Or in this case, I don't have a TV partner, and my options are limited now because ESPN's not interested. What if there were four sports networks that were good? We don't have it.
Yeah.
So thus, your options are limited. It is a scary thing, I think, in society as a whole. And at the end of the day, everybody can talk a great game, but let's just not lie about this. Let's be absolutely forthright. If somebody from Sweden, Japan, New Zealand comes into North Central Kansas and offers you $1 million for your house, and the next best offer you got's $500,000, you don't care where they're from.
No.
You don't care, but what you might not know is those are people coming in that are perhaps got some different ideas on why they're going to be. We've heard this land being bought near military bases. Now, I don't want to go too far into all kinds of stuff politically, but I don't think we're as vigilant as we need to be. And we kind of let a few companies and people control things. And we sit here and we go, oh, Wade, you're making a big deal of nothing, man. They're just gambling. It's fun. Yeah, until your favorite team loses your best player and all of a sudden you're going to care, won't you? Oh, I don't care if Calvin Ridley got suspended for a year. I bet you'd care if Travis Kelce did.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You don't think that can happen? It can. Imagine if Patrick Mahomes did something. I think he's smart enough not to. Listen, if I was an athlete, I'm not. If I was an athlete, current active athlete. Now, listen, Charles Barkley, gamble away. You know, whatever you want to do. Shaq, whoever, you guys are done. You know, you don't have to listen to the rules of the sports. But if I were an athlete right now making good money, I wouldn't touch any bet whatsoever anywhere to be safe. Why jeopardize anything?
Yeah.
Why jeopardize it at all? It's not even worth Patrick Mahomes betting $100 on a hockey game. It's just not worth it. Why take a chance on anything? You know, it's kind of like when we talk about putting supplements into your body. You know, these go, oh, I didn't know what I was putting in. Well, I did, but I didn't, but I did, but I didn't. I wasn't really, no, you got to be damn sure what you're putting in your body. As an athlete, yeah. You need to be sure of that.
Yeah.
So I don't feel sorry for some of these guys that get busted. Oh, I didn't know that was in that supplement. Well, your job, it kind of is your responsibility. You're responsible for what you put in your body. And ultimately, you are responsible for taking your money and handing it over to gamble, whether you gamble a lot or a little. But where the trouble lies, and the NFL and these pro sports leagues don't care if you get addicted to gambling or not. They don't care if you get drunk and get behind the wheel because they made their money off of alcoholic sponsorships. They don't care. Oh, that's a horrible, horrible thing. They don't care. They made their money. It's all good. But where they will care is when they're product is damaged. They will care if Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen get in a big gambling scandal. They suddenly will care. The NBA will suddenly care if LeBron James or Jokic are in some kind of gambling scandal. They gonna care if the 12th man on the team? No. They won't. Same thing with any other sport. So I'm sorry I went on there, but it is scary, and I don't think a lot of people in our society are understanding it. This has been going on not just today, not yesterday. This has been going on since I worked in Kansas City, and that was 1998, 25 years ago, where they were talking about the concern of the government allowing companies and corporations to gobble up a whole bunch of little companies and become monopolies is what we're talking about. That's not a capitalistic society. When you become a when you start to have monopolies, that's not capitalism at all. So just be, I mean, we got to be a little bit more vigilant. And I think we just allow, we live in our little bubble in our world, which is probably maybe a good thing. Honestly, I get it. Like, you know, I can't control it anyway, so what the hell? Okay, I get it. I've been there, done that. I'm still guilty of it. So getting back to just the sports part of this conversation, you don't care right now. Everybody listening probably really doesn't care. Until it affects your team. You don't care if the athletes gamble or not. You don't care if there's all kinds of FanDuel ads during the game promoting gambling. You don't care about athletes going out and blowing a whole bunch of money gambling. But you're going to care when all of a sudden a guy's involved in organized crime because he owes so much money and he can't pay because he's addicted, or you're going to care when it's a star player gets involved in something like that. You're going to care when a referee screws your team over because he's in cahoots with, as Tim Donaghy was, with organized crime. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to care. If you're a sports fan, it eventually probably over time will affect your team at one way or another, whether it's an athlete that you might not even know it. That's the thing. Well, this guy's suspended, but you don't want to say what it's for. Or it's they're on the injured list. And actually, it might be going to Gambling Anonymous or AA. You know what I'm saying? That a lot of teams try to protect their people. They're like, you know what? He's injured. He's out with a hamstring. No. They got something they're dealing with here. And so you don't care until it happens to somebody you love or to yourself, or it's in, and you don't care unless it's in your backyard. That's the really ultimate point I'm trying to make.
I mean, just to expand on the second part of what you're talking about with conference realignment, we care about that because that's affecting our schools and our teams, right? Like, so we care about that right now because we know that Texas and Oklahoma leaving the Big 12 makes it probably less of a possibility to get a gigantic rights deal from TV, grant of rights from whatever TV station you're trying to help within your own conference. And so your money goes down. It all revolves around the money in the end of it. And so if it affects that bottom line of your university, and which is what's happening with KU and K-State when Texas and Oklahoma leave, right? And we got a lot of fans out here that don't like that and then understand that, oh, now we're in a scramble. We're going to keep this league together, things like that that go on. Well, you don't have to deal with that yet with the gambling part of it, right? Like, it's not there yet, but it will. Like, when the NFL has the NFL is just an example because they're the ones that are doing this and suspending people right now. So, but when the NFL does have Travis Kelce or a guy of the stature, it doesn't even have to be a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes. It could be a Kelce. It could be like a J.J. Watt type of guy, right? Like somebody like that comes out and they catch them gambling or whatever they got to do and suspend that guy for a year, then you're going to start seeing where other companies that have these guys on endorsement deals and things like that, maybe that'll dry up. Maybe they'll be like, oh, we don't want to be associated with this if you're not doing it the right way. And so until that happens, then no, they're not going to worry about Calvin Ridley. They're not going to be worried about this guy that got released by the Dolphins that I don't even remember his name anymore, right? Like, they're not worried about any of that until it actually happens to somebody that's going to hurt the NFL's bottom line. They don't care if it's going to hurt the Detroit Lions' bottom line. They care if it's going to hurt their brand as far as a nationwide thing. Yep. And if it's going to hurt their sponsorship opportunities. If FanDuel's not going to pull out, they're going to get bigger. DraftKings is going to get bigger. Every other state that adds gambling to their list of things that are legal, this is only going to get bigger for FanDuel, DraftKings, BetMGM, all those people. And so obviously that means it gets bigger for the NFL, the money they get back from those people for having sponsorship deals. And so they're not going to – that's not affecting them until somebody actually does it that it's going to may eventually hurt their bottom line, which is not going to happen, I don't think, for a while. I think even one – they can survive one big person doing it. But if it becomes an issue and it becomes, you know, an epidemic, then you're going to be in trouble. And that's the only time they're going to care about it.
I think the ultimate one is, I mean, the athletes, you're right. I agree with you that you could, it'd be a big story and everything, but if it's one or two prominent athletes, there could be three or four, they're still going to survive. But if you've got a widespread problem with a crew of officials,
absolutely, yeah.
Or like we've talked about this before, now you've got a major problem on your hands, because then you're like, okay, these games are rigged, and I'm paying money. I want my money back. Right? Integrity, right?
Because people,
you got
think
players involved. Now you start getting officials involved, and you can prove that. Now you've got players and officials gambling on games they're involved in or within the league. You got a major problem on your hands. And yeah. The saying that I keep coming back to in my head is, be careful when you sell your soul to the devil. Now, that might be a little bit extreme for this example, but I think some of those other examples I set forth in society is exactly what's happened. We're just like, you know what, to hell with the consequences, I got my money. Yeah, but what you don't know is it might eventually come back and bite you in the butt, so you sold your soul to the devil. I'm telling you, this is just the tip of the iceberg. I've never been more confident in something in my entire life.
Oh, yeah.
It's just the tip of the iceberg. It, as long as there's still investigations and oversight. Now, it won't be the tip of the iceberg. The only way it's not the tip of the iceberg is if eventually you just turn your eyes a different way. And that's what they were saying in the 60 Minutes story. Like, well, how did they get away? Where's the oversight by the government so that they can make sure these companies aren't extorting or overcharging our government and taxpayers' money being wasted? Well, guess what? Over the course of the last so many years, the amount of workforce that was involved with our government, that was paid, trained employees to keep these contractors at least somewhat honest or on the up and up, they have decreased that workforce by a whole bunch of people. So now they have less oversight. So they save money by not paying people and cutting their jobs, and then waste way more money. They would have saved a lot more money keeping these people on to keep people in line. And so what you ended up doing is you cut those jobs so there's less oversight.
Mm-hmm.
So now these companies can get away with it. There is no police, per se. And that's kind of like what I'm saying here. Eventually, if this becomes a big problem across the board, which I think it could, is there enough people to oversee it and investigate it and catch people that do all this stuff? Or will it eventually be like, you know what, I got an idea to solve the problem. I'm a National Football League. I'm a billionaire. I'm a multi-billion dollar company. You know, here's what I'll do. I'll just go ahead and work with some politician to make sure that there's less people involved to oversee illegal gambling. That'll solve it.
Mm-hmm.
You see? And that's how politics do work sometimes, people. 10:34 is our time. We went long. I swear, we don't want to do this on Monday. I thought we were in good shape, and then the dang sports gambling stuff pops up again. Thanks a lot, Adam Schefter.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.